Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 2, Text Number 45. Nasrota nanu vaktayam Mukyo Pyatramahan Asu Yastin Yastwihindriyabhan Atma Yastwihindriyabhan Atma Sachanya Pranadhe Hayoho. Alright. Hari Chief. Na shrota nanu vaktayam Yastvihindriyavan Atma Sachanya Pranate Hayoho. Mothers, Nasruta Nanu Vaktayam Mukyo Pyatramahan Asuhu Yastvihindriyavan Atma Sachanya Pranade Hayoho Nasrota Nandu Vaktayam. Na, not Shrota, the listener. Na, not Anuvakta, the speaker. I am this Mukyaha, chief, api, although Atra, in this body, Mahan, the great, Asuhu, life heir, Yaha, he who, to, but Iha, in this body, Indriya of Han, possessing all the sense organs, Atma, the soul, Saha, he, Cha, and Anyaha, different, Pranade Hayoho, from the life air and the material body. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. In the body, the most important substance is the life air, but that also is neither the listener nor the speaker. Beyond even the life air, the soul also can do nothing, for the supersoul is actually the director in cooperation with the individual soul. The supersoul conducting the activities of the body is different from the body and living force. Purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead distinctly says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, verse 15, Sarvasya cha hum hridi sannivishto matashmritir jnanam apohanam cha. Quote, I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. End quote. Although the Atma, or soul, is present in every material body, dehino smin yata dehe, He is not actually the chief person acting through the senses, mind, and so on. The soul can merely act in cooperation with the supersoul because it is the supersoul who gives him direction to act or not to act. Mataha shmitir gnanam apohanam cha. One cannot act without his sanction, for the supersoul is upadrashta and anumanta, the witness and sanctioner. One who studies carefully under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master can understand the real knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, supersoul, is actually the conductor of all the activities of the individual soul and the controller of their results as well. Although the individual soul possesses the indriyas or senses, he is not actually the proprietor, for the proprietor is a supersoul. Consequently, the supersoul is called Hrishikesha, and the individual soul is advised by the direction of the supersoul to surrender to him and thus be happy. Sarva dharman pradyagya mamekam sharanam vraja. Thus he can become immortal and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom, where he will achieve the highest success of an eternal, blissful life of knowledge. In conclusion, the individual soul is different from the body, senses, living force, and the airs within the body. And above him is the supersoul, who gives the individual soul all facilities. The individual soul who renders everything to the supersoul lives very happily within the body. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. So Hiranyakashipu is trying to relieve his family members of lamentation. So the general method we see in the sacred text by which personalities try to remove lamentation from others is to discuss Atma Tattva. That's generally the method that discusses the Jiva Tattva. So when Arjuna is also lamenting on account of attachment to family members, Yudhishthira Maharaj in the first canto is also lamenting on account of attachment to family members. Vyasadeva is lamenting for a different reason. And also here we see Hiranyakashipu family members are lamenting on account of attachment to family members. So the method for relieving one of that lamentation is to discuss Atma Tattva. That's the method. without being situated in knowledge of the soul different from matter, then there's no way to be relieved of lamentation. Lamentation is just a transformation of the modes of nature, generally the mode of ignorance. When the mode of ignorance becomes prominent on account of losing some attachment to some ephemeral object. Lamentation is a result of happiness linked to ephemeral objects, isn't it? You have some ephemeral object that makes you really happy, isn't it? Say like smartphone, since I've been on that one recently. So if you lose that smartphone, then lamentation takes place. Great lamentation takes place, isn't it? So anytime one's happiness is linked to some ephemeral object, then when that ephemeral object manifests its ephemeral nature by disappearing from our vision, then the next thing that ensues is lamentation. So, and of course, attachment to a phone or an inanimate object is not as intense as attachment to an animate object, such as society, friendship, and love, which will all be devastated by the material nature, by the material time factor. So then when one loses those things, then lamentation is ensued. So then unless one is able to understand the difference between matter and spirit, then there's no way to transcend the influence of the mode of nature in the form of lamentation. So usually the method for relieving one of lamentation is just to discuss Atma Tattva. Obviously, as we were discussing in the post-class yesterday, you have to be quite qualified to be able to digest that message also. Because oftentimes when we're affected by lamentation, we don't want to hear Atma Tattva. That we already know. We want to hear something practical, you know, or we just want someone to, you know, pat us on the back and say, I'll be there for you. You know, I'm there for you. And that for us is transcendental knowledge or transcendental action, isn't it? If you're suffering from lamentation, the devotee just says, you know you're not these modes of nature. You know, immediately you say, what an insensitive jerk. You know, you feel like that. You may not say it, but in your heart, you're like, thank you, Prabhu. But in your heart, in your heart, you're feeling mad, you know. How could he be so insensitive, isn't it? So obviously the hearer himself has to be quite qualified to digest that transcendental knowledge as well. So we see that, we mentioned this yesterday, but I'm just bringing it up again, that when Krishna is speaking Atma Tattva, the hearer is Arjuna. He can digest it. When Narada is speaking Atma Tattva to Yudhishthira Maharaj, he could digest it. And Yudhishthira Maharaj is a qualified hearer, etc. Even here, Hiranyakashipu's family members are showing themselves to be greatly qualified hearers because, as we'll see later on, they actually get relieved of their lamentation by hearing from Hiranyakashipu, which is unique because he couldn't relieve himself of lamentation, although speaking Atma Tattva. Anyway, that's another point. So the hearers themselves have to be a little bit elevated. Normally, we think just sit down and hear the class. What is the difficulty? Oh, Shravanam, you know, bhakti just means hearing and chanting. What is the difficulty? You can just sit and hear the class. But actually, to hear it takes incredible qualification. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, some see the soul as amazing, some speak of the soul as amazing, others hear the soul as amazing, and others, even after hearing, cannot understand the soul at all. Why is that? Because they're not hearing. And not so easy to hear, actually. Actually, one has to be trained to hear, and one has to purify himself to become qualified for hearing. Otherwise, transcendental knowledge hits you like a blade, especially when you're in the lower modes of nature. Transcendental knowledge seems very... And by transcendental knowledge, I just simply mean the talk of the difference between Atma and the material world, just that standard. It hits you like a bat in the face when you're in the lower modes of nature. It seems callous. Just a very outside of Krishna's teaching. He says that the learned does not lament for the living or the dying. You know, and that's Krishna speaking in relationship to Arjuna's family members. He does not lament for the living or dying. That hits you like a blade when you are in the lower modes of nature, isn't it? One does not appreciate so much. So the speaker here has to be qualified. Anyway, so the method of relieving one of lamentation is to discuss Atma Tattva. And one may have to be trained up to become qualified to really digest that Atma Tattva. You might be able to hear it, but you might not be able to digest. Just like you eat food, that's all right, but you have to be able to digest it. There's like a nice feast is there, tasty feasts, you know, cheesecakes and all these sorts of things. But if you have some problem with the stomach, can't digest it, you know. So then, although it may be tasty, it will act in the opposite way if you can't digest. So then, you know, in our situation, we have to help persons increase the digestive power for transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, it hits them like a blade to the face. You know, it cuts very heavily. And they may become antagonistic on account of hearing those cutting vibrations. So anyway, inevitably, when you discuss Atma Tattva, in order for that realization to be sustainable, you necessarily have to discuss Paramatma. Because the Atma is part and parcel of Paramatma. Mamayavam sho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha, Krishna says. So because the soul is a tiny part of the Paramatma, inevitably when discussing Atma Tattva, then Paramatma Tattva also becomes discussed. And also to realize that Atma Tattva and to sustain that realization, one needs the assistance of the understanding of Paramatma Tattva and the practice of devotion towards that Paramatma. Otherwise, lamentation doesn't go away. You understand? Lamentation is not easy. Maya is very powerful. So, therefore, in the very outset of Krishna's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning, he discusses the difference between the Atma and himself. What is that? Naham. What is that? 212 Bhagavad Gita. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall never cease. Yeah, not to it. Why he's mentioning this point in the outset? Because he wants to set up his major point. First, he just wants to make the point that the Atma is different from Paramatma, or different from the Supreme Lord. And the method of actually becoming relieved from lamentation is to surrender to the Paramatma. So he wants to just set up his point, this point in the beginning, just keep make that impression. There is a difference between the two. And then later on, he will discuss Atma Tattva, and the process of realizing Atmatattva in the first six chapters, only then so we can discuss the Paramatma, because foundational understanding of consciousness different from matter is required for understanding the Paramatma. And then he discusses Paramatma, or the Supreme Lord himself, Bhagavan. Paramatma is also Bhagavan, but all his powers manifest. In that way, only when one surrenders to Paramatma can he actually get relief from lamentation, permanently, without any chance of it coming back. There's a verse from the Bhagavatam, Bhayam Dutuya Abhinivesha Tasha, that's a famous verse. Ishare Petasha Viparyo Ashmitihi Tamaya Yato Buddha Abhijetam Bhaktiya Kyesham Guru Devatatma. It's a very powerful verse. So it discusses that Ishare Petasha means the soul is oblivious of the Supreme Lord since forever, basically. Basically forever. Oblivious towards the Supreme Lord. And as a result, Ishara Petasha is literally turned away from the Supreme Lord. You know, Kishori is that direction, we this direction. And as a result of being this direction, Viparayo Ashmiti. Ashmitihi means he becomes forgetful. Forgetfulness means not forgetful of the Supreme Lord. That was already established a while ago. God's already been out of the picture for a long time. So the forgetfulness, according to Srila Sridhar Maharaj, which our devotees quote in their comments on this verse, means he becomes forgetful of his self as different from matter. On account of his obliviousness towards the Lord, he becomes ashmitihi, forgetful of himself as different from matter. And as a result, vipariyo means he has a reverse conception of life. So instead of thinking he's a soul, I'm a body, those things which are causes of bondage, he thinks is a cause of freedom. Those things which are actually suffering, he thinks to be nectar. Just like someone smoking marijuana. So this is nectar. Actually, it's suffering. But if you go to them and tell them, look at all this suffering you're doing. I mean, suffering. I want more of this, you know. They don't think it is suffering. But it's actually suffering, but they don't see it that way. They think it's nectar. And then they come in the Bhagavatam class, now this is suffering. Now this is suffering. They don't want to hear it. Even our devotees think like that also. Oh, what's the speaker of the non-devotees? Isn't it? There's a reverse conception of life. That which is nectar, they say is suffering. Bhagavatam class is nectar. But you go, this is suffering. You know what my favorite part of the class was? When they said Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah, the class got over. That is called vipariyo. Vipariyo means reverse conception of life. And that which is miserable, you think to be nectar. So you want to go and waste your time at the pizza parlor during the Bhagavatam class. And you think, now this is nectar. You know, going outside and getting, you know, you term it prasadam, but your vision is not prasadam. Your vision is sense enjoyment. That is actually misery. But you think it is nectar. This is called vipariyo. So because of being oblivious to the Lord, one is forgetful of his spiritual nature, and he is afflicted by a reverse conception of life. As a consequence, bhayam dutiya abhinivesita. Dutiya abhinivesita means he becomes absorbed in a secondary existence. Means that actually everything is basically a manifestation of the Supreme Lord. But he sees everything as separate from the Lord. This is called dutiya abhinivesita, a secondary thing. Something separate from the Lord. And on account of that vision, he's always afraid, bhayam, afraid, or you can say insecure. Material world means insecurity. Insecure, will I get my food, will I get my sex, will I get my sleep, like this. And we're always bhayam, insecurity is there. So this is maya. Tamaya yato means this is maya. One is in maya. So how do you get out of this maya? Buddha abhijetam, if one is intelligent to get out of this maya, then bhaktya ekaya. Yeah, bhaktya ekaya isham. Then he renders exclusive devotion to the Supreme Lord, or Paramatma. Guru Deva Tatma, seeing the Guru as his Deva and Atma, seeing the Guru as Guru Dev, seeing the Guru as one's worshipable deity and one's very self, Atma, Guru Deva Tatma. So in the commentaries, Srila Sridhar Maharaj brings up, our devotees are commenting here, that someone may say, well, actually, because it's just because of ignorance that a person is illusioned by society, friendship, and love. But once they get that atma-tattva, they get that understanding, then illusion will be dispelled. So no need to surrender to God. You just need to get atma-tattva. Then you're good. You're good to go. Srila Sridhar Maharaj brings up this point. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita saying, nah, it's not that easy. Daivyesha gunamayi. Mama Maya Dharatiya, Maya is very strong. Daivyesha Gunamaya means Maya is divinely empowered by the Supreme Lord. Divinely empowered to do what? Keep you bewildered. She's divinely empowered to keep the soul bound up in the material nature. So even if you got that Atma Tattva, Maya can snatch it. Actually, getting realization of the Atma is just a function of Maya, actually. Maya has two potencies, an avidya shakti and avidya shakti. So getting even realization of the Atma is just the vidya shakti of the material energy. And so therefore, even when you have realization of the soul, it's considered in the sattva-guna. So it's not stable. That's not a stable realization. Because like anything in the modes of nature, it's always in flux. So one is not safe just because they have that Atma Tattva. That's the point I'm trying to make. You're not safe. It can only become stabilized by devotion to the Paramatma. So inevitably, when the Bhagavatam, whenever you hear discussion of Atma Tattva, you'll hear the discussion of Paramatma come up and surrender to him, devotion to him, for making that realization sustainable and long-lasting until you actually get out of the material world. Because if you're not out of the material world, you're not safe. You might have your realization, that's nice, bravo, you know. It's definitely an accomplishment to realize the difference between matter and spirit. Any of us who have yet to realize that can appreciate that it's an accomplishment. You know, sometimes you credit those impersonalists, but they got realization, you know. It means they're real impersonalists. They got realization. Like Shukadeva Goswami, you can't just say, oh, he was just an impersonalist before Vyasadeva. Still, that was appreciable realization. He could walk around naked in front of beautiful women and not be disturbed. That's impressive. Is it not? And still you're not safe unless you surrender to the Supreme Lord. It means at one point you're walking around naked, at another point you're in trouble. It's not stable unless there's surrender to the Paramatma. You understand? So whenever Atma Tattva is discussed, because the Atma is a part and parcel of Paramatma, Paramatma will also be discussed. And surrendering to him as the ultimate solution to our lamentation issues. You understand? You got this point? I was fine. Just like here, I was one verse. Samane vrikshe purusho nimakno nishaya shochati muhyamanaha. And this verse says, there are two birds in a tree. One bird is enjoying, and with his enjoying, he's engrossed in anxiety and moroseness. That's enjoyment, right? I'm enjoying morose. Somehow or other. And the other bird is just watching him. Saying, poor fellow. Poor fellow. He's enjoying. Look how much he's enjoying. Huh, you really enjoying? Yeah, I'm enjoying. Super souls. Sad situation. Jushtam yada pashati anyamisham. When that soul is suffering enough and then he turns his face towards the Isham, the super soul, and he sees the super soul, then at that time, asya mahimanam iti vitashoka, knowing the glories of the super soul, that suffering bird becomes, he becomes freed of all his anxiety, vitashoka. So this is always the point. To become actually stabilized in realization of the self is different from matter. There has to be knowledge and worship of the Supreme Lord like this. So in this verse, Hiranyakashipu, quoting the story of Yamaraj is speaking to these foolish ladies who are lamenting over a body. So in the previous verse, he was explaining how you're lamenting for a person you've never even seen, which is, you know, foolish. The person you're lamenting, you've never even seen. Who was that hearer? Who was that speaker? If the hearer was those ears, which are still in front of you, if the speaker was that mouth, which is still in front of you, then there's nothing to lament. Look, the ears are still there, the mouth is still there. But no one is responding. So those ears were not the hearers, the mouth was not the speaker. They have no individual power to hear or to speak because they're just instruments that have no consciousness. They're insentient. So insentient things don't have consciousness. They're just like glasses. You might be seeing through the glasses, but the glasses don't see independently, so they have no consciousness. So only when they're infused with the power of the Atma, the consciousness of the Atma, do they appear to gain ability to see and perceive. And perceive means either hear or smell, etc. Like this, when the Atma is there. So it is that Atma who is actually the hearer and the seer. That's the point that was made yesterday. And that person you have never seen. So why lamenting? You've never even seen the actual person. Why are you lamenting? Like this, he's telling. But in this verse is being pointed out, but even that individual Atma, by his own power, cannot perceive also. He perceives by the power of the Paramatma. By the power of the Paramatma, he has actual ability to cognize this reality. It can be understood in different ways. The word Mahan used in this verse refers to the Mahatattva. The idea here is that even the energies of the Supreme Lord that allow for cognition are his energies. They're not the energies of the soul. The intellect, the mind, the senses are the energies of the Supreme Lord. Just like in the 87th chapter of the 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami Parashrit Maharaj poses the question, how is it that Krishna is transcendental to the modes of nature? My ears are composed of the modes of nature. Your tongue is composed of the modes of nature. And Krishna is beyond the modes of nature. So how did you just speak about Krishna and I heard about Krishna? How is that even possible if Krishna is completely beyond the modes of nature? So then Shukadeva Goswami answers the question in an indirect way by saying that the intelligence, mind, and senses were given by the Supreme Lord to realize enjoyment on this plane, on the heavenly regions, and ultimately realize liberation. So that, like, doesn't seem to answer the question. As usual, you get a lot of answers like, well, how? You know, does that answer your question? Nah. Not answer my question to that. And they have very high intellect. So then, yes, that perfectly answers it. And the rest of us are like, how is that perfectly answered? That didn't even touch the question, you know. But the idea of the verse is that just without, you're not the creator of the mind, senses, and intelligence. Who created those mind, senses, and intelligence? Obviously, it's not the soul. Definitely, if it was the soul, I would create a better mind for myself. No doubt, you know. So we're definitely not the creator of the mind, senses, and intelligence. So who created the mind, senses, and intelligence? Oh, so Supreme Lord is given. Paramatma is given that. And why he's given that? For you to realize sense gratification on this plane, if that's your purpose, or to realize liberation. I would have brought this verse down if I thought it just came up as I'm speaking. So just as Krishna has empowered the senses to realize sensual objects on this plane, then they also have another function for helping one realize transcendence. Therefore, although the Supreme Lord is beyond the modes of nature, these senses have mind, intellect, etc., they also have a function to assist one in realizing that transcendence. And how do they have that function? Because that function was given by the Supreme Lord. So the idea is just as by the mercy of the Lord, you can realize sense gratification. And that's actually this verse here. Sarvashya chaham hridisani vishto matashmita gnanam apovanam cha. That verse is in context of how Krishna is helping the conditioned soul in the material world, this verse. So I'm situated in the heart of everyone, and I'm giving remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness by which they can enjoy in this world. You understand? If you didn't have memory, you can't enjoy. You got to at least remember who you are, minimum. And that's required. And then you have to have knowledge of how to pursue the sense objects. And this is all coming from Super Soul. So he's the basis for our ability to enjoy. He's given the facility by which that's possible. So in the same way, those facilities have another function in helping one realize the Paramatma or transcendence. That's the idea there. You follow that? That's the point. So by the mercy of the Lord, you can enjoy sense gratification. Krishna says in the same section of chapter 15 how he's a fire of digestion. So if you don't have that, finish. You can't eat anything. So he's helping the conditioned souls in the same way he helps them to realize transcendence in this way, if that's their intention or their purpose. So the super soul is he who is facilitating even cognition of the material plane. So just as the soul infuses the senses with power to perceive, it is the super soul who is infusing the soul with the power to perceive. And so by the mercy of the super soul, we are existing. So the Atma, understanding this, turns towards the Super Soul, and he can become relieved of his lamentation. That's the implicit understanding, although that's not being the point being exactly made right here. But that's just like if you hear, this has a technical term, but I forget. If I tell you that your grandfather, your late grandfather, left you a huge wealth, how does that translate in your mind? What's the first thing you think of? Huh? But before enjoyment, what do you think of? Where is it? How to get it? That's the first thing that comes to mind. Okay, sounds good. Where is it and how to get it? These are a special type of instruction in the scripture. I forget, it has a technical name, I forget the name. So although the Shastra does not always directly speak of a methodology, but it is implied. And this is an example given. Just like you hear you have some wealth, immediately you understand, I want to know how to get the wealth, isn't it? So in a similar way, hearing about the super soul being the cause of our cognition, the cause of our ability to even interact with one another, then the implicit understanding is you should worship him. He is the source of our maintenance, our sustenance, etc. So then Prabhupada writes in the purport here that one who studies carefully under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master can understand the real knowledge that the Supreme Lord is actually the conductor of all the activities of the individual soul and the controller of his results. And going down, thus he can become immortal and be transferred to the spiritual kingdom, where he will achieve the highest success of an eternal blissful life of knowledge. So this is required. Hearing from a bona fide devotee, knowledge of Atma, knowledge of Paramatma, then the method of worshiping Paramatma, and only in this way one can become free from lamentation. Otherwise, lamentation is always accosting the jiva on account of the flux and the modes of nature. It is inevitable. And you'll see also in Nectar Devotion that one of the 64 regular principles is that one should not be overwhelmed by lamentation. That's one of the 64 regular principles. That means that's supposed to be our practice, an aspect of our practice. Therefore, one has to keep hearing about Atma Tattva, Paramatma Tattva, and how to surrender more and more to the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, one is caught by lamentation. And lamentation is very debilitating. So once it catches you, you can't act very properly, even on the material platform, which to speak of spiritual sadhana and so on. Okay, I think this is my class. There are other points. Prabhupada's quoting a few verses here, so I just looked up those verses. And inevitably, these verses are verses glorifying the super soul. And then the very next verse thereafter says, anyone who understands his Paramatma, Tattva, that he will get knowledge. He'll be relieved from the material clutches of birth and death. So I was just saying those verses are, there's very much, my point is, it's very much connected. Discussion of Atma Tattva, Paramatma, they're very much connected. You hear about this Atma Tattva, then you hear about Paramatma, you hear about worshiping him, then you'll become free from this lamentation. Otherwise, not. Okay, any questions, comments? Yeah. Yeah, sure.
What are the qualifications and qualities of the qualified hearer, of the bona fide hearer? What should be our... is it only purity, or are there some other things?
You could probably have a seminar on that topic, and that would probably be a good seminar topic, because it's not easy to hear, and probably no one's hearing. But there's a nice verse. It's actually quoted in Baladev Vidyabhushana's commentary on chapter 2, but Prabhupada also quotes it in his Gita following Srila Baladev. But he just writes the English. He doesn't quote the Sanskrit. So let me just find it really quick. It's a cool little verse speaking about the qualifications of the hearer. Which verse is it? Give me a second. Not this one. Not that one. So, and it is concluded that Arjuna is quite free, unless... Yeah, here it is. There's certain that would be all these considerations that he's not. He was enlightened and had complete control of his mind. Okay, so I'm going to have to try to make out what the points are. There are four distinct points, four or five of them. But Prabhupada just writes it as English, so it's not always clear. But it's actually a Sanskrit verse. So if you go, it's to... Chapter 2, verse 6. And if you see Srila Bhadeva's commentary, you can see Prabhupada's following that. So Prabhupada says here, it's from like the Chandogya Upanishad or something. So even if, I'm just read the whole thing, because if I start in the middle, it's going to sound confusing. So Arjuna, this is when Arjuna is expressing his confusion. Should I fight? Should I not fight? Right before he surrenders to Krishna. So Prabhupada says here, Arjuna did not know whether he should fight and risk unnecessary violence, although fighting is a duty of the Kshatriyas, or rather he should refrain and live by begging. If he did not conquer the enemy, Begging would be his only means of subsistence, nor was there certainty of victory, because either side might emerge victorious. Even if victory awaited them and their cause was justified, still, if the sons of Dhritarashtra died in battle, it would be very difficult to live in their absence. Under the circumstances, that would be another kind of defeat. So Arjuna is confused from all these reasons. So then Prabhupada says, all these considerations by Arjuna definitely prove that not only was he a great devotee of the Lord, but he was also highly enlightened and had complete control over his mind and senses. So this is the first one. Complete control over his mind and senses. All right, I'm already disqualified. I already got to walk out, you know? It's like, well, because what's the qualification for me entering to this university? Complete control of your mind and senses. All right, see you. I got to exit this place. So that's the first one. Anyway, if that wasn't discouraging enough, his desire to live by begging, although he was born in the royal household, is another sign of detachment. So he wants to be a little detached. Actually, that's just really practical. In order to hear, you got to be a little detached from your own perspective. Otherwise, no question of hearing. There's a quote that I liked. Leonardo da Vinci is noted for quoting it, but Krishna said it first in chapter 7. But Leonardo da Vinci is getting some credit from the modern man. He said that the greatest deception that men suffer is from their own opinions. The greatest deception that man suffers from their own opinion. Krishna said it first, Itra Dvesha Samutena, Dwanda Mohinabad, that from the very outset of their birth, people are completely bewildered by duality in the form of desire and hate. Same statement. Leonardo da Vinci just kind of made it a little bit more succinct and he got a little credit. So one has to be a little detached from their own perspective, otherwise no question of hearing. So that's the second one. So if that wasn't discouraging enough. He was truly virtuous as these qualities. I don't know if virtue was one of them. I don't remember like piety. I don't remember. Combined with his faith in the words of instruction of Krishna, his spiritual master, indicates. So that's another one. Faith in the instruction of the spiritual master. If you have no faith in the spiritual master, then what is the question of hearing? Hearing requires faith. Otherwise, you cannot hear. If you try to hear from someone you don't have faith from, that's okay. That will be the ritual. That should go on. Or at least it does go on. At least we, you know, got to show up for the class, you know. Like, I was getting chastised when I had this. I mentioned it yesterday. This devotee was chastising me because I said, I'm disappointed in the Bhagavatam class in Vrindavan. And he said, well, whoever is speaking, you should anyway come. And I said, no problem. I don't mind coming. Because I have a big mouth. I can just from the audience make a trouble also. No kidding. I don't need the podium. I don't need the podium to make trouble. You know? But I said, my question to him was, what is the responsibility of the speaker also? Because a lot of times we put a lot of weight on the hearer. You know, you're fault-finding, you're not grateful. I said, these are all true factors, no doubt. You know, I'm definitely a fault-finder, and I'm definitely not grateful, you know? But what is the responsibility of the hearer? He has to feel his weight of responsibility too. So we were having some discussion like this. So the point is that if you don't have faith in the speaker, it's very hard to hear. Therefore, usually you would hear from a spiritual master, someone you have faith in, basically, is a spiritual authority. So that's at least three qualities. So unless the senses are controlled, there is no chance of elevation to the platform of knowledge. And without knowledge and devotion, there is no chance of liberation. So there were four qualities, but I don't know what the fourth one is. So control of the mind and senses, detachment, hearing from the spiritual master, and I'm not sure what the fourth one is. I can't make out from Prabhupada's writing here. But he's quoting a particular verse, so we can look that up. So that's one verse. You asked what it called. I mean, you can quote many verses, though. I'm just giving one idea there. You can quote the Tadvidhi Pranipatena verse. First, there should be, Pranipatena means there should be submission. So already many are disqualified from that. Then there should be relevant inquiry, pratiprashna, you know, complete comprehensive inquiry. And what that means, all these points can be actually elaborated on unlimitedly. And then there should be seva. So that's another, these qualities are required for hearing. So there are many verses, there are many things that could be told. There has to be a little bit appreciation not a little bit, a lot of appreciation for the futility of material existence. Tasma gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya uttama. Tasma, unless you realize the futility of material existence, there will be no guru prapadyeta. Guru prapadyeta means you surrender to guru. But how you will surrender to guru unless you appreciate the material existence is futile? If you see that material existence is still meaningful, then your surrender will not be complete. It'll be showy only, showbiz, show bottle. So then that's another thing that's required for hearing. There's got to be appreciation or detachment that was like this. So many things can be discussed. There's some food for thought. Yeah, a second.
The mind, intelligence, and senses are from Krishna. He created them.
Yeah, right. The Maya Shakti, right? Yeah. From his Maya
but
Shakti.
We know that, I don't know if you agree with this point, I've heard it, that we in our spiritual bodies, we have our original mind, intelligence, and senses.
Okay.
Do you agree with this point?
Okay. You can say the whole thing, all right. Because you hold me into a corner. And then.
And if we have our original mind, intelligence, and senses, doesn't that mean that the soul it's originally to belong to the soul and Krishna doesn't manifest them, or he still manifested them? You know, the original. I'm not speaking about the material intelligence.
Yeah, I got it. I have an answer for this, but it's a little controversial. The question is that we have our original spiritual mind, senses, etc. They're not products of the material energy. They're products of the spiritual energy. This is one aspect of the question. So you're trying to understand, because I was saying in the class that they're given by Krishna. Anyway, the controversy, it's a philosophical controversy. It's a huge one. It's been a popular debate for years. I mean, centuries. and that debate is essentially is putting it this way, is bhakti inherent or is it given by the spiritual plane? So the spiritual body, mind, senses are manifestations of the internal energy. And so my basic understanding is that the soul, he comes in contact with a spiritual body, mind, and senses at the time of Vaikuntha liberation or spiritual liberation with a spiritual body, Siddhadeha. That's discussed in the first chapter, sixth canto. When Narada Muni gets his body, it said he gets his material, his spiritual body. So is it inherent? I've never seen any place where it discusses it like that. So I can't confidently say this way or that way. And I mean, I can go into more detail in terms of what I'm understanding so far as I've been trying to research it more and try to get some. But I'm going to choose not to do that here just for the sake of keeping it simple. So in any case, no matter what conception you would accept, the spiritual body is still something that's a gift from the Supreme Lord. That's like bottom line. That's the essential point. So whether you accept that, we have to accept that the material body and senses are given by the Paramatma. It's a manifestation of his Maya Shakti. And the spiritual body, mind, and senses is a manifestation of Swarup Shakti, as is bhakti. So first one has to get bhakti. And then at the time of becoming free from this body, one is, you know, say, gifted their spiritual body with spiritual mind, senses, intelligence, and so on. So in either case, the material body or the spiritual body is a gift. That's my understanding so far. Yeah.
Hi, Christian. Thank you for the class. So you mentioned a point that we mentioned that verse that we turn our back away from Krishna. I don't have a piece of paper, so I have to kind of look at this the small paper I wrote on. So this brings to mind some of the points you made yesterday. That the last chapter was entitled "The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone." Mm-hmm. So sometimes we in the material world we see, you know, that let's say any association, material, spiritual association, we feel like, you know, the Lord is not equal to everyone. He's more, you know, favorable to some people than others. And you mentioned a point of the super soul. The super soul is always looking at us, you know, saying, you know, I'm not just looking at others, I'm looking at you, you're VIP also, but you've actually turned your way. So we see other people and become like envious or whatever. And there's many examples, like the gopis, they thought Christians...
I wouldn't exactly say VIP, he's just looking at you.
Yeah, that keeps us humble. That's
Super Soul is pretty neutral. So he's just looking at you, and that's like very important. Just looking at you.
That's a good point, because he always humbles us, like Indra, so... So he's always looking at us, and so sometimes, even with the gopis, they was the only Christians looking at me. Yes, that's true, but he's also looking at everyone else, too. And so my point brings up to the some of the points you made yesterday and some of the points Lakshmi Moni mentioned about modern technology. I mean, you could give any example about, like, this example that's come up in your class and has come up recently, like smartphone, like when you were in Vrindavan, you know, people were kind of impersonal. Like, when you... Because the Devotees Association is kind of supposed to be personal, but you mentioned some of the points you mentioned, like, you know, people, it's like so impersonal, you know, you try to associate with devotees and just modern technology, Bhaktivinoda Thakura. So how can we increase, because we really only have a control of our own selves. We can't really control anyone, but can you elaborate on some of these points? How can we increase our, more personal relationship with devotees and not be so distracted?
Sit down and discuss Hari Katha with them.
Yeah, but sometimes, like you mentioned, sometimes they, it's Yuddha Vairagya. Sometimes that point is brought up.
Yuddha Vairagya.
Yeah, when you're using different stuff and, like, let's say smartphones, it's just one example.
I mean, your question is, how can we be more personal in our interaction with devotees? My answer is, you can put the smartphone down and go and have Hari Katha with devotees.
Yeah. But that's only one level. Like, suppose you want to have, some interaction, but others don't. So it's like you can't do anything about that. So it depends on faith. You have to, like you mentioned,
you can't catch everyone. So you catch one person and have a Vaishnava exchange. It's not like we're God and we can exchange with everyone. So you can just catch one person and have a Vaishnava exchange.
Yeah. All right, cool. Thank you.
Nothing to it but to do it. Someone's got to do it. Someone's got to start it. Like that. Okay. Anything else? Any other question? Yeah. On the 11th canto, chapter 2, verse number 37.
11 to
37.
Okay, and I do have another question if we have time. In scripture, we see a lot of examples of lamentation. In the Ramayana, Lord Ram was lamenting over the loss of Sita.
That's special, but anyway, okay.
I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more about how we should see that, those examples.
As manifestations of the Swarup Shakti, Leela. Just like devotional life, the culmination of bhakti and practice is bhakti and completely, utterly inconceivable emotion. Prema is emotional life. And just like our emotions are practically incomprehensible on the material platform, all of a sudden someone's got a bad attitude. It's like, where did that come from, Oh, so-and-so is, whatever, isn't it? On the material platform, our emotions are practically incomprehensible because we're being moved by the modes of nature. And they might just switch on us at any moment. So all of a sudden, you're just feeling like angry. For no good reason, like, why are you mad? I don't know. Because the mode of nature just switched on you. And because we're under the influence of the modes. So it's probably inconceivable where a lot of our emotions are coming from many times. And we ourselves really don't know. And then one day you wake up, you're like, maybe not one day, this probably happens a lot. And you're just like, Mangalarti. And then the next day, Mangalarti. because the modes of nature are moving us. So just as we are moved by the Maya Shakti, in the spiritual reality, everyone's moved by the Swarup Shakti, the internal energy. And that's also emotional life. So you'll find that Vishada means like despair, self-disparagement. Like these sorts of things on the material platform means you need to see a psychiatrist. I suck and I'm the lowest of the low. I'm worse than the worm and stool. They're like, wow, this is really serious. Get the heavy medication. But when you read about the spiritual reality, in fact, Narada Muni in the Brihadbhagavatamrita when he's discussing with Gopal Kumar with his prema, in the prema chapter, chapter 5 of part 2. He's like, I don't know if I should tell you about prema, actually. He expresses some diffidence because he said, when you hear about it, you will impose the material emotional life onto the spiritual emotional life and become afraid. That's exactly Prabhupada's purport to Vidaragabhaya Krodha, 410 Bhagavad Gita, that you impose the material onto the spiritual, the material experience onto the spiritual, and you become fearful. So Narada Muni himself shows some diffidence. I don't know if I should tell you, but it's so nectarian, I'm going to tell you anyway, you know. He becomes overwhelmed and inspired to talk about prema nonetheless. Kaviraj Goswami compares it in the CC to hot sugarcane juice. Or, you know, I've never had hot sugarcane juice. I'm not going to try it either. But from the description, you know, when you're drinking it, it burns your tongue. So it's painful. But it's so sweet you can't stop, you know. So like that, the emotional life of prema is utterly inconceivable. Therefore, CC is saying, do not try to understand. That even for the learning, they can't make out. Learning means persons who are self-realized, they understand the difference between matter and spirit. Their basic quality is sobriety. So they can't appreciate the emotional life. Therefore, you find Prakashananda Saraswati and his men, they're all definitely self-realized persons. For sure, they're jivamuktas. You know, very highly elevated persons. But when they see Lord Chaitanya dancing, they call him, this is a bhavuka. That's actually a compliment, but they were meaning it as an offense. Bhavuka means one who's got bhav, you know, he's got emotion. He's like, why are you dancing with all that bhav? They couldn't appreciate it because the spiritual emotional life looks like the material thing if you're not enlightened enough. And it's hard to appreciate. So Lord Ramchandra crying over his wife and Krishna doing all sorts of cheating business for the love of his devotees and so on, can't concentrate when the gopis come around. You also can't concentrate when the gopis come around. Then the material gopis. Yeah. The material gopis come floating around and you also can't concentrate, can't focus. And then Krishna also can't focus when, just like Prabhupada writes in the third canto of chapter 31, that he said he says, where is the source of sex life? And then he said, Jamadiyasa Yataha, the source of sex life is Krishna. Everything is coming from Krishna. So he said, just as we want to be attracted by a woman, Krishna also wants to be attracted by a woman. Prabhupada writes like this. But you think he'll be attracted by any woman in this material world? And then he quotes that Haridas Thakur and other great personalities, they gave up such an attraction to worship Krishna. So you think Krishna will be attracted to such a woman? Of course not. Therefore, he has to create a woman from his own energy, Swarup Shakti, and he becomes attracted there. So those actions of the spiritual reality are the actions of the internal potency. And they're called apakrita. There's adokshaja and there's apakrita. Adokshaja means transcendental, beyond the senses. Apakrita also means beyond pakriti. But there's a distinction between these two terms, actually. Adokshaja means transcendence, which you can easily understand as transcendence. Lord Narayana with four arms. Okay, that's God. There is no question. But apakrita means it looks like pakriti, but it is transcendental to pakriti. So Krishna Leela is known as apakrita Leela, not just as a dokshaja Leela. It is higher than a dokshaja. But it looks like pakriti, but it is transcendental to pakriti. And therefore, it has a very bewildering aspect to it. Therefore, if one doesn't hear from the acharyas, they give their own purports to these sorts of things. Even Lord Ram was crying. You're like, Lord Ram crying? Your crying is a totally different thing. So you have to hear from the acharyas what is the understanding. And of course, when it comes to God, it's easier to understand. When it comes to devotees, it's where it gets really confusing sometimes. Like, why was Ramananda Roy massaging the limbs of the Devi Dasis? What type of transformation of internal energy? Yeah, what am I supposed to get from that, you know? One thing you get, don't try it. Ramananda Roy is greatly advanced. And Lord Chaitanya said that. He said, even when I associate with women, I get agitated. But Ramananda Roy, his mind never agitates. Clearly. Clearly, you know. So like this, we understand, in a simple way, it is the transformation of the internal energy. And how you understand that internal energy, you have to be invested with internal energy to understand it. In the form of bhakti. Bhakti is a transformation of the Swarup Shakti, particularly the Samvit and Hladini Shakti. So the Samvi Shakti means the potency that allows for cognition of the spiritual reality. So the example given in the Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 16, is just like an iron rod doesn't have any inherent power to burn anything. But if you put the iron rod in fire, then you touch the iron rod to a piece of cloth, then what burns the cloth? What burns the cloth? The fire, not the iron rod. The fire that has become one with the iron rod burns the cloth. So similarly, the bhakti potency invested in the jiva becomes one with the mind and senses of the jiva, and that allows for cognition of that reality, understanding of that reality. So unless you have bhakti, you can't understand what's going on. That's basically the bottom line in the shastras, especially you go to like the 10th canto and Krishna Leela and so on. It's like, you got bhakti or not. Only, you know, just like I'm having an image of, I don't know, who killed Roger Rabbit? Anyway. It's the most transcendental example, but that somehow popped in my mind because, sorry, I'm a conditioned soul too. I just remember this one scene where the detective was trying to get into the building, and they open the how you say? There's like a steel door, and they open the thing to see who you are. And then you have to say like a code word or something, you know, like that. And then you're let in into that reality. So it's a mundane example, but it makes the point nicely. So similarly, they open the thing, it's like, nah, you ain't got bhakti. You open it, you ain't got sufficient bhakti. You got a little, but you ain't got enough, you know? No entry. Like that. So one has to have enough of the internal energy of Krishna invested into their heart for appreciation and perception of these realities. So then one has to increase that by Shravanam and Kirtanam. You know, the more and more Shravanam and Kirtanam, the more and more one opens his heart to the ingress of bhakti into the heart. Then you can appreciate Ram Leela, why he's crying, why Krishna broke his promise twice. You know, we can, as devotees, we have faith, and so now we have some appreciation of those topics. Before, as a non-devotee, you hear many Hindus, they criticize Krishna. What type of man is he? Broke his promise twice. And devotees, we find that that's what makes him ecstatic. You know, we appreciate Krishna for that more than we appreciate Lord Ram. Ram was all strict, you know. If someone was criticizing him, so I'm sorry, Sita, you got to go. And many of us, you know, Krishna, it's like, all right, I mean, he's an independent Lord, but we feel uncomfortable. But then we hear about how Krishna, Prabhupada writes, Krishna was interested in being remembered as Bhakta Vatsalya, one who loves his devotees, and not one who never breaks his solemn vow. And we're like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, because we have faith. We've gotten some faith from bhaktas. So we can appreciate to some degree, but you can only appreciate completely when your heart's completely invested with the internal energy. Then you have access to that reality. Whoa. Like a kid in a candy store. And then you become ecstatic like that. Is it? Anyway. Dang it. All right. Well, you have 1 minute, 30 seconds.
Hare Krishna. The experience moving towards spiritual life, there's a pattern I've observed in my own practice, mm-hmm. and to some degree others. One experiences some what you could call success or satisfaction, like a greater degree of spiritual understanding or experience, and then with that feeling of success comes like a lessening of the intensity of one's practice or one's calling out to Krishna.
Really?
And then after some time, then one starts to suffer, and then the intensity or the calling out to Krishna again increases, and then one makes more advancement. So like that, it's kind of staggered. How can one, first of all, would you agree with this?
Yeah, that's basically a Narsana Vritti going on. Hills and valleys, hills and valleys, hills and valleys. Sometimes good, sometimes not good. So then, once you add Nishta, you solid.
At that point, then one is constantly...
Yes. Very eager.
The intensity of his practice is steadily increasing.
Yes.
Is that
the word Rupa Goswami uses is sadhana abhinivesita, and nectar of devotion. He's completely absorbed and sadhana. Because now no analysis disturbs his consciousness, right? So he's just sadhana bini veshita. He's just like solid. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Bhakti Tattva Vivek that anarthas cannot easily catch him now. Means that initially it's like jiva mukta state, like that you will hear in the Bhagavad Gita and so on. Anarthas can catch, but not very easily. Mostly it won't happen. And then very quickly, ruchi comes up, asakti. It's like before Narnavritti, it's just like uphill. And it's not even uphill, it's like almost like, like vertical. I ain't making it, you know? I don't know if I'm going to make it. You got this heavy baggage of karma on you. You know, and that's also, and you feel like you're walking backwards. But after you get to Nishta, that's like basically almost downhill walk. You know, most of the charges you see, they're writing that Nishta, and then very quickly Ruchi comes in. So once you get to Nishta, it's solid ground. Getting out of the Narthas is hard, therefore Sadhu Sangha is always prescribed. And Sadhu Sangha means many things. You can give a huge seminar on Sadhu. Every point you can give a huge seminar on. Sadhu Sangha, though, Rupa Goswami gives three adjectives. The first one is, he says, you have to be having some like-mindedness with the sadhu. The other one is that the sadhu has to have particular affection for you. At least that makes it easier for you to hear. And the third one, Shnigde. So Sajati Ashaya is the first one, Shnigde is the second. And he has to be advanced to uplift you like this. That's how you get out of Narthas. So people who are out of faith in sadhus, which is, in the modern day, it's a little tough to get faith these days. A devotee was, at this point came up in London, I was asked to give class, and someone was quoting Tamal Krishna Goswami. And they said that Tamal Krishna Goswami said that the tendency is only to think that the heroes are in the past. The heroes are only existing in the past. There are no present heroes. Therefore, no present need to take shelter of anyone. So then that would be our life, shelterless life. Like Srila Prabhupada Maharaj always gives this example of the dog in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, he was holding a dog, like a little poodle, you know, a little cute thing. And then these other dogs came barking, and the person holding the dog just showed the stick. You know, you want to mess with this, you want to mess with him, you got to mess with this. And so all the dogs went away. So that was an example of sanatta, right? Sanatta means one who has shelter. And then the opposite is anatta. So that's a little poodle, he by himself, you know? And them dogs are vicious, you know? I mean, they usually don't attack humans. They're usually pretty chill. But sometimes, especially in the nighttime, they get really active, you know? And then he's by himself. Now, he a poodle. What are you going to do? You're going to get hurt. So if you find some shelter and solitude, you get out of that Narthanivritti. And then Nishta, once you're in Nishta, you're pretty solid, according to Madhuri. And then Ruchi comes up, exactly like that. Yeah.
About that point, but there, we only think that there are heroes in the past and nothing, no one in the current. We shouldn't think that the post is open for us to be the heroes and give others shelter.
Well, there is one hero, after all.
There's always one. I'll give the shelter to everyone.
Yeah, that tendency is there. Especially if you're having a good, let's say like a good 6 months of sadhana.
Sanatha, anatha.
And you're ready to be the guru.
If it's not sanatha and not anatha, I can be the natha.
Yeah. And you know, spiritual life is razor sharp edge, huh? You're not doing good, and so you're suffering. And then you start doing good, and then you think, I'm great. And then it's like, razor sharp edge, spiritual life is challenging. Therefore, if you got to catch up some good sangha and just be there, then your life will pass without even noticing it. That is best. Your life will pass without even noticing it. It won't be a question of, am I making sufficient spiritual advance? No, it's endless speculation. You'll just be enjoying the nectar. Harikata is going on, kirtan is going on, Vaishnava seva is going on. And then you'll be going old and dying. And it won't even be like, oh, I'm dying now. That is ideal. That's the type of situation you want to be in, finally. Where you just absorb. You're doing your seva. You're absorbing the Harikata, Harikirtan. And then you just die. And you go, you know, go back home, back to God. I get this expression from the 10th canto, Bhagavatam, chapter 2. I think Sri Vishwanath says, he said, the devotees are so absorbed in Shravan and Kirtan, they don't even notice the world passing them by. And I always appreciated that, like, wow, you know, that would be really... In other words, they are so absorbed in their devotional service to Krishna, it's just like, where is the time for all these things, you know, complaining? All right, so we'll finish here. Thank you all very much for telling me. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.